Well, hello everybody and welcome to Basic Gospel. Today we're excited to bring you a most special program as Bob Christopher had the opportunity to speak with one of the foremost defenders of the Christian faith of our time. So without delay, here is Bob Christopher.
Well, our special guest today is Dr. John Lennox. Dr. Lennox is the Emeritus Professor of Mathematics at the University of Oxford. He is the Emeritus Fellow in Mathematics and Philosophy of Science at Green Templeton College, and he's the Associate Fellow of the said business school. Professor Lennox has written extensively on the relationship between science, religion, and ethics, and he is probably best known for his public debates with leading atheists such as Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens. I admire Dr. Lennox for his courage, his curiosity, and his clarity regarding the big issues of life. Well, Dr. Lennox, it's an honor to have you with us. Welcome to Basic Gospel.
Oh, thank you very much indeed for your invitation.
Well, this is a real honor for me and a real joy, and there are so many questions that I want to ask you. You're just one of those. I call Larry Taunton, your friend and my friend, the most interesting man in the world, and I think you have taken his place for that title, the most interesting man in the world. And I love your curiosity. I love the steel that's in your heart that gives you just the authority to defend the gospel the way that you do. And I know that began for you many, many years ago. And there's a particular event at Oxford when you were a student and you were pressured by a Nobel Prize winner and some other academics to actually give up your Christianity. Can you tell us a little bit about that story and how that particular event has shaped and prepared you for the important work that you're doing today?
That event occurred actually in Cambridge, where I started, but that's okay. And it occurred early on in my undergraduate career. In my college, we had dinners from time to time. And this was one of those special dinners. And I found myself sitting beside a Nobel Prize winner in science. And I'd never met one before. So I thought it would be very interesting to talk to him. And I've always been very curious. I play the role in a way of Socrates. I ask questions. So I started asking questions. From an early age, before I left school, I was essentially committed to the intellectual defense of Christianity. And so my questions started fairly neutrally about his science, but I tried to approach the God question. And that was clearly a mistake because he didn't like it and he backed off. And that was that. And I thought he turned to his neighbor on the other side and I thought that was it. But at the end of the meal, he said to me, "Lennox, come to my room." And it sounded more like a command than an invitation. So I went. And he'd invited several other senior academics. There were no other students. And so far as I remember it, they put me in a chair and two or three of them stood around me. And he then said, "Lennox, do you want a career in science?" And I said, "Yes, sir." Well, he said, "Then you've got to give up this naive faith in God and do it tonight in front of witnesses, because if you don't, it's going to hold you back. It's going to cripple you intellectually. You'll never make it. You'll suffer in comparison with your peers." Well, talk about pressure. And of course, later, I couldn't help thinking that if he'd been a Christian and I'd been an atheist, he might well have lost his job the next day.
Yeah, that's right.
The slate is not balanced. And in the end, I said, "Well," I said, "what have you got to offer me that's better than what I've already got?" And he mentioned a philosophy of Émile Bergson, and I'd heard of it because I'd read C.S. Lewis, and I knew a little bit about its content. So I simply said, "Well, if that's all you've got to offer me, I'll take the risk and I'll stick with what I've got." And I walked out. But as you mentioned, it really put steel into my heart. I thought, you know, firstly, it showed me a dark side of academia. This wasn't science. This was bullying, really. And it made me resolve, if ever I was in the position to talk about these things in public as an academic, the last thing I would want to do is bully people. I would want to discuss the issues, the both sides, and allow people to make up their own minds. It was a very important thing looking back because it gave me courage in later life to face some lesser minds.
Let me ask you this, Dr. Lennox. You know, I think it's important for all of us to have our faith tested so that we can see that it's genuine, that it's authentic, that it's not just lip service. How can you help our listeners kind of look back on their lives and see how God has used different events in their experience to really put some steel in their heart and give them courage that they may not know that they have?
I think the first important thing about your question is that Christianity is testable, and it's testable at different levels. The issue with this Nobel Prize winner, of course, was an intellectual one. But Christianity is also testable in experience. And I mention that in my new book, Can Science Explain Everything? It's very important for us to realize, those of us who are Christians, that Christianity is an evidence-based faith. That is, the Lord does not expect us to believe blindly. He gives us evidence. And one of the clearest statements of that occurs in John's Gospel in chapter 20, where John says Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you might have life in his name. In other words, John is saying, I've collected these signs together, these miracles, and I'm writing those as evidence upon which you can base a solid faith and trust in Jesus. So Christianity is an evidence-based faith. And you notice in that text two things. Firstly, to believe two facts, that Jesus is the Messiah. Secondly, that he's the Son of God. But thirdly, that you, through believing, receive life in his name. Now, that's testable. Many people say to me, how could you be a Christian as a scientist because your faith isn't testable? I say, where did you get that idea? It's perfectly testable. For instance, doing it really directly, which is the only way I know how, I said to an audience the other night of many people in Romania, I said, look, Christ claims that if we repent and trust him as Savior, then certain things will happen. Firstly, we receive peace. Does that mean anything to you? Well, a lot of people don't have peace and they want peace. Well, you can receive peace with God, forgiveness. We've messed up our own lives and the lives of others, and he offers forgiveness. He offers us new power to live. And those things are perfectly testable. I often say to people, you know, you meet someone, say a student who's really at their wit's end and they may be in despair, they may be involved in alcohol or narcotic dependence, and they're right on the floor. And you meet them 6 months later and they're beaming and smiling and there's food on the table, relationships have been restored. You say, what's happened to you? And they may say something like, well, I became a Christian, or I trusted the Lord, or I met God, and so on. But however they say it, it's perfectly obvious that something has transformed them. And when you have seen that, as I'm sure you have many times and so have I, you add two and two and you get four. And you say there's a strong connection between Christ's promises and their fulfillment when people take them seriously. That is testability in experience. And of course, in the end, the proof of any pudding is in the eating.
Yes, indeed. Well, I know many of the atheists that you have debated, they're skeptical of Christianity and faith because they believe it's blind faith, that there's no evidence to support it. And you've just really burst that myth, haven't you?
And they don't realize that their own atheism is actually a blind faith.
Yes.
And that's the sad thing. They write Christians off and they say, you are people of faith. That means you believe where there's no evidence. But we're scientists. We're rational. We don't have faith, which is absurd. They believe their atheism. And as far as I can see, they've very little evidence to back it up. The evidence is on the Christian side. So there's a big confusion out there about the nature of faith, very sadly.
Yes, indeed. For our listeners, we're making available Dr. Lennox's book, Can Science Explain Everything? I've read through this two different times. It is clear. It is easy to understand. It is really a book I think every Christian needs to read. We are making it available through our website. website. You can go to basicgospel.net and click on the big banner right on the home page and order your copy. And I suggest getting more than one copy, one for you and one for a friend. Maybe use this book as a source for a Bible study, but this is an excellent read. And Dr. Lennox is a fantastic writer. He's very clear. He's easy to understand. And he takes these big ideas about God and all the issues of life and breaks it down in such a way that they just make sense. So don't miss out on your opportunity to get this book, Can Science Explain Everything? Well, Dr. Lennox, you had a wonderful experience. Again, as a student, you were involved in some lectures that C.S. Lewis did. And tell us a little bit about those lectures and how C.S. Lewis has shaped your life and your thinking as far as how you do your work today.
Well, now you're telling your listeners that I'm old enough to have heard C.S. Lewis.
But well, I think that's amazing. That's just amazing.
I confess to it. Yes. 1962, Cambridge, cold winter. I had no idea that C.S. Lewis had been very ill, and he'd just come back to give a final series of lectures in the English faculty on John Donne, the English poet. Now, the faculty lecture rooms were just across a narrow lane from the maths department. And I had been reading Lewis as a boy at school. And so I thought this is a unique chance to go to listen to him. So I went across the road and listened to him. And by so doing, I attended the last lectures he ever gave in the University of Cambridge. And what I remember, apart from the clarity of his diction and the sheer brilliance of the language, the room was completely packed against all the non-existent fire regulations of those days. They were all over the floor and so on. And at the appointed time, he burst through the double doors, and he was a big burly man and had a heavy coat on and a hat and a scarf. And as he came through the doors, he started to take these things off. He first took off his hat, and then he unwound this huge scarf, and then he picked his way through the students, got to the podium, and finally got his coat off. And by that time, you had a fabulous 5 minutes of brilliantly worded lecture without any notes, of course. And at the end of the lecture, he reversed the process. He kept lecturing as he put on his hat, wound up his scarf, put on his coat again, and uttered his last words as he burst out of the room. There was no Q&A. So that's my memory of Lewis. But you asked the much more important question, of course. His influence on me has been profound. You see, I come from the same country as C.S. Lewis, Northern Ireland, and my parents were Christian. They were remarkably Christian in the sense that it's a sectarian country with a sad reputation, unfortunately. But my parents were not sectarian, which was unusual. And secondly, they gave me space to think, which is probably why I'm sitting here talking to you today. They loved me enough to allow me to think and come to my own conclusions. And my father came across C.S. Lewis when I was about 12 or 13. And he passed the books on to me, and I immediately got hooked. And what was interesting to me was that because I have never been an adult and not a believer, it was important to have a guide to that world, someone who knew it by experience. And Lewis was one of those. He was an atheist up until his adulthood, certainly. And he helped me to understand atheism from the inside and also some of the major problems with it. And that was a huge preparation. Of course, I didn't know that at the time, for eventually stepping into the arena to debate people like Dawkins and Hitchens and Peter Singer and so on. The other thing was that although he was an English humanities professor, he understood science, at least the philosophy of science, very well, which is why some scientists don't like him at all. He sees that the emperor has no clothes, and therefore his responses, particularly to the dominant naturalistic philosophy in the academy today, have not really been surpassed. They're just brilliant. He put his finger on the central arguments that I use all the time today. So Lewis has been an immense help although I never personally met him. I saw him at a distance of 20 feet, but that was about it.
Oh, I think everybody listening would have loved to have been in your shoes back in those days to hear C.S. Lewis and to just have that experience as a part of their resume. So, gosh, it is just wonderful to hear you talk about him and how he's influenced you. I know what I really admire about you as far as the debates that I've seen is that you are very forthright in proclaiming the gospel. You've never been afraid to talk about the death, the burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And I know you're not doing that to try to persuade your opponents, although that's a part of it, but you're talking to people listening. And I just admire you so much for that. And I think that takes a lot of courage to stand in that arena and declare the good news. And one of the things that you do so well is that you kind of break down the debate between science and God to a debate about worldviews, naturalism or materialism versus theism. And talk to us a little bit about the importance of worldview and the importance of seeing this heated debate that's going on, this war zone, as some people have called it, as really a debate about worldviews, competing worldviews.
Well, what has happened over the past few years is that the public, the general public, have been sold a lie. And the lie is that science and God are basically at war, and you cannot be an intellectually respectable person and believe in God. And I want to say that science and faith in God are not at war at all, really, true science and true faith in God, but that there is a real war. And the easy way to illustrate it is to take, for example, the Nobel Prize in Physics. And if you look at the people who've won that prize, you will notice that some of them are believers in God and some of them are atheists. Take, for example, William Phillips, an American Christian. He won the Nobel Prize some years ago. And take Charles Townes, also an American Christian who won the Nobel Prize. On the other hand, you've got Steven Weinberg and you've got Higgs, the Scottish physicist. They both won it and they're atheists. Now, when you think of people at that level, they're not divided by their physics. They're both geniuses. They're all geniuses. But they are divided by their worldview. Charles Townes, a believer. Steven Weinberg, an atheist. That is where they separate from one another. And just looking at those examples that I've given shows me immediately that the war is not between science and God. It is between atheism on the one hand and, in my case, Christian theism on the other, and there are scientists on both sides. So what we really need to ask is the much more important question, is science neutral or does it point towards atheism or does it point towards theism? And I want to argue very strongly that it points towards theism. And one of the most obvious things to say at the beginning is something that C.S. Lewis taught me years ago, that in a very real way, we owe modern science to Christianity. And Lewis put it brilliantly, as always, men became scientific. Why? Because they expected law in nature. Why? Because they believed in a legislator. So sometimes I say rather provocatively to people, look, I'm not remotely ashamed at being a scientist and a Christian because arguably it was Christianity gave me my subject. The pioneers, Galileo, Newton, Clark Maxwell, and so on, all believed in an intelligent creator, and therefore that motivated them to study an intelligent creation. Atheism has nothing to offer that parallels that.
Nothing at all. And in your debates, how have people responded to this worldview idea? Has that been something that has turned light bulbs on and people's understanding to see it in a different way? And maybe
very, very, very much so. You see, the myth that's out there is that we Christians have a worldview. We are believers. which means we're crazy. We believe where there's no evidence. But the fraternity of atheists like Dawkins, they're not believers. They're rational scientists. And what they fail to see is that they believe their naturalism, their atheism. They're as much believers as we are. The difference is that I don't think their belief is justified. I do believe Christian belief is justified. And when you can get across to people, look, every person has a worldview. That is, they've got answers to the big questions. And really, there aren't many possibilities when it comes to ultimate reality. Either you take the atheist view, ultimate reality is the universe or mass energy or something, or even nothing, which is popular these days, or ultimate reality is God, who is separate from the universe, created it and maintains it. Now, I am aware there are other variations on the theme, but the two that clash in the academy are atheism and theism. Everybody sits somewhere in the spectrum, even if they're skeptics. They will tend towards atheism or theism or possibly pantheism. But we leave that out of the discussion at the moment because those two are the main ones. Once people see that, and I have seen the lights go on with many people, gosh, I've got a worldview too. Yes. And I say, where do you sit? Well, I think I'm more towards, okay, I've got a worldview. Now let's talk about the reasons we believe in our worldview. And I find once you get to that point, you can then ask people, and they love to be asked, why is it you believe what you believe? And my hope is, and it normally happens, they come back and say, and why is it you believe what you believe? So it's now become a level playing field. It's not you're a believer, I'm not a believer.
Right.
They are believers.
Believers in something.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Well, that leads me to a final question for this edition of Basic Gospel. As you're a curious guy and you ask a lot of questions. I think Socrates was a big influence as far as asking questions. Speak to us just a little bit about the idea of persuasive evangelism through conversation, just engaging people with questions, asking why you believe what you believe, and how that opens doors for the sharing of the good news.
Well, first of all, it's the way in which the Lord did it and his apostles. The Gospels and Acts are packed full of questions. They reasoned about their faith. And, you know, when I say that, sometimes Christians get a bit nervous and they say to me, but look, don't you believe in the Holy Spirit and so on? You're depending on your reason. Now, that's a confusion of thought, and it's very important to make clear what's going on here. Read the book of Acts and you see Paul reasoned with them and he spoke with them and he discussed with them and so on. But the key to his persuasiveness is this. He was using his reason. He wasn't trusting it. He was trusting God and God's Spirit. And that's the important thing. You see, idolatry is when we trust other things other than God. And those of us who've had a pretty high-powered education, there's a real danger for us that we trust our intellect and we use God when we get stuck, to put it bluntly, rather than the true Christian attitude, which is to use every talent we've got, including our reason, but to trust God. You see, the first commandment is to love God with your mind. And I'm sad when I see Christians who have very good minds. You'll see them in business, academia, every profession you like, but they won't use their minds when it comes to the gospel because they think somehow that's wrong. It's not wrong. It's a sin not to think. It's not a sin to think. And if you're using your mind trusting God, and you see exactly what happens with Paul and the others, so that there's no contradiction between trusting God and his Spirit and then using argument, persuasion, reason. If you took the reason and argument out of the New Testament, you'd have almost nothing left.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, Dr. Lennox, thank you so much for being with us on this edition of Basic Gospel. I want to remind our listeners about his book, Can Science Explain Everything? It's available at our website at basicgospel.net. Be sure and go there and order your copy. You will be encouraged and blessed in your Christian life. This has been a special broadcast of Basic Gospel. Be sure and join us again tomorrow for part two of our conversation with Dr. John Lennox.